97.5 The Fanatic.
And one of our top picks every week, Marcus Hayes from the Philadelphia Inquirer. Hello, Marcus. How you doing tonight, my friend? You there, brother?
Yeah, I had you on mute.
Oh.
Sorry about
that's
that.
That's usually the best way to hear
me. I didn't want you to hear the this Packers game in the background.
All good, brother. All good. How are you, man? Long season. It's over. We're watching Seattle today. Obviously, the Eagles did not advance, and you know you covered last week's game. Let me just ask you this right off the top. If Carson Wentz stays healthy in that game, do the Eagles pull that game out?
Carson Wentz stays healthy in that game. The Eagles go to the NFC Championship game.
Okay. All right. I love it. All right. That's excellent.
I mean, it's just that simple. I mean, he has to protect himself. You know, it's unfortunate that a guy who plays a very, very violent brand of football got a free shot at him, but it was a legal hit. It was legal on the field at the moment. The NFL ruled it legal after a week of looking at it. And, you know, the two guys that determined that stuff are former Eagles, John Runyon and Troy Vincent.
So, yeah.
You know, let's move on from that.
Sure.
Carson Wentz, you know, if Jadeveon Clowney is a violent player, he's going to take shots at you the same way, you know, Seth Joyner would have taken his shots at you and Reggie would have taken his shots at you. And we certainly know that Derek Barnett will take his shot at you.
Mm-hmm.
He's got three unnecessary roughness and a roughing the passer penalty this year. He's the most penalized defender on the Eagles team. That said, it's Carson Wentz's job to protect Carson Wentz.
What could he have done differently?
Throw the ball away. It's a screen pass.
Mm-hmm.
You're inviting the defense into the backfield.
Yeah, you're exactly right. No,
if they diagnose a screen pass, which is what Seattle does best of all the things they do as a football team, they diagnose screen passes best. They diagnosed it with a defensive lineman, and all he's got to do is throw it away, throw it at his feet, or throw it over his head. That's it. That's the diagnosis. That's the protocol. That's what you do. And he didn't do it, and he got hurt.
Okay, so let me ask you this. Because he has not finished each of the last three seasons, he's missed the playoffs each of the last three seasons outside of nine snaps. And even going back to college, he's had all the injuries. He did have a clean first year, his rookie year, but known as injury prone. Does this go down as an injury tacked on to the injuries that kind of classify him as injury prone?
Well, I don't think the right terminology is injury prone because that implies that he's fragile. I don't think he's fragile and I don't think he's not tough. I think he's unwise. And if you want to define injury prone as someone who puts themselves at risk for injury too often, then absolutely. I mean, there's an argument to be said, you know, there's an argument to be had that should be injury prone as well. But yeah, I mean, he has to learn how to take care of himself or he will not. Certainly will not reach his potential. And his potential is limitless. That's the thing. You know, the one area where it's not limitless is he's not a very good runner. He's an okay runner. You know, he's not elusive. He's not particularly big. He's not particularly strong. He's adequate. You know, he's as good a runner as like Aaron Rodgers is. Maybe better. But, you know, Aaron Rodgers is not a guy that you spy necessarily.
Right, of course
not. And you don't need to spy. You don't need to spy Carson. He's just not. That is not a viable. You will gladly allow Carson the opportunity to run several times a game for the opportunity to hit him.
So you're kind of putting this loss, if I understand you, at the foot of Carson Wentz.
Well, yeah, I wrote a column about it earlier this week. I mean, Carson Wentz should have thrown the ball away. Because he didn't throw the ball away, he left the game. Because he left the game, they lost the game.
Makes sense. Josh McCown comes in, plays with a ripped hamstring. How do you play with a hamstring torn off the bone? Was that accurate?
Lots of drugs, man.
Jeez.
As long as you can perambulate, you know, I mean, you've played with stuff that's messed up before.
Sure,
as long as you can function, as long as you can function, you can play. And, you know, that's the sort of thing. You just, deaden it. And my thing is he played through a torn hamstring, injured it further, then held a press conference.
You're right. He did.
I mean, all you got to say is, look, I think I tore my hamstring. I'm not really able to talk about this. I'll get you guys tomorrow at the locker room, you know?
Oh, he doesn't, get a lot of media coverage. He thought he'd bask in the glow a little bit.
For a guy who retired and then became a backup quarterback, he gets a lot of media coverage. He's a pretty available guy. It was like having another coordinator day when he was around in the locker room.
Yeah.
I enjoyed him. I really did. I think he's going to be a great coach in the league if he wants to do that, and he could probably do it tomorrow. I'd hire him as my offensive coordinator if I was Doug before the week's out.
I was just going to get to that because they do not have an offensive coordinator now. What do you think of, I guess I should say, how do you think the hierarchy worked in that particular situation? Because Doug says that Carson Walsh is coming back. He says that his offensive coordinator, Mike Groh, is coming back. And the next day, they're both fired. Does that come from over him? Who does that come from?
Oh, that's a Jeffrey Lurie call. Absolutely.
So the owner's getting involved in making those decisions?
Absolutely. Just like Jerry Jones. You know, Jerry Jones has been hiring and firing assistant coaches for years. And that's why nobody wants to work. It's one of the big reasons why nobody wants to work with Jerry Jones. You know, so, you know, I'm not saying it's the right or wrong move. I'm saying that that's what happened. And I was never a fan of hiring Mike Groh because there was really no reason to hire Mike Groh. If you were going to say, okay, who deserves this job? Mike Groh didn't deserve it. It sort of fell to him because of the way that Josh McDaniels stood up the Indianapolis Colts.
Right, sure.
Cost them Frank Reich after John DeFilippo had committed to Minnesota. But that doesn't necessarily mean, oh, we go with Mike Groh now. Mike Groh had done nothing to deserve that job and didn't do it very well in my estimation. So all that said, you know, it's that definitely was a Jeffrey Lurie call. I mean, Jeff McClain reported it as such. I found out afterward for further confirmation that nobody in the organization believes it was anything but Jeffrey's call. Doug probably wasn't too hard to convince, but the way he answered the question, asked twice about his offensive coordinator, Mike Groh, and his receivers coach, Carson Walsh, there's no doubt that he intended to keep both of those guys as of Wednesday. Now, the bigger issue is, you know, who does he replace them with and who does he get to replace them?
Right. Now, whose call is that?
Well, if you're the guy firing, you're the guy hiring.
So you're going to tell me Jeffrey Lurie's in charge of hiring our assistant coaches now?
Nobody gets hired in this organization anymore without Jeffrey Lurie's okay.
I'm sure that's fine to have an okay, but he's not going to spearhead the search, is he?
Why not?
He's not a football guy.
Well, he just fired two football guys.
No, I understand. He is by definition, but like at least I'll give you Jerry Jones. He played college ball.
Who do you think? Who do you think hired Jim Schwartz? Jim Schwartz had his press conference on the day Doug Peterson. Jim Schwartz had a press conference to begin with, okay? There was no offensive coordinator. They hired Jim Schwartz and introduced him at Doug's press conference. Doug couldn't even have his own press conference.
I remember it. I was standing right there. Yeah.
Have you ever seen anything like it?
No. Mm-mm.
Okay. So my point is, for better or worse, Jeffrey Lurie is the general manager of this team when the biggest decisions have to be made, and the biggest decisions are becoming smaller and smaller all the time.
So
this is the same as John Middleton firing the hitting coach and hiring Charlie Emanuel. It's the same thing. And you know who were really good friends? Jeffrey Lurie and John Middleton,
right. 97.5.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.
The Fanatic.
Okay, interesting. Well, that doesn't necessarily instill a lot of confidence in me. Jeffrey Lurie's a very smart guy, but what does he actually know about offensive coordinators and defensive coordinators?
Well, I think that's a rhetorical question.
Do you know what I'm saying? I mean, but what does he really know? How much help does he get from Howie and Doug?
Well, what does Howie know about offensive and defensive coordinators?
But at least he's studying. He's around the NFL. He's studying guys. He talks to GMs. He knows other coordinators and coaches. You know, I'm like no offense, but Mr. Lurie isn't really in the trenches necessarily, is he?
Well, I would posit that he's in the trenches as much as Howie. You know, Jeffrey Lurie's in the draft room. Christina Lurie used to be in the draft room.
Oh, God. Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
I mean, this is the reason people roll their eyes at this organization is that, you know, it's always been rotisserie football. It's always been all these fingers in the pie.
All right, expound on that. Rotisserie meaning fantasy football. What do you mean by that?
Jeffrey Lurie has always been very involved in every major decision. Everyone. Helping Ray Rhodes hire his staff, hiring Dana Bible. You think Ray Rhodes wanted to hire Dana Bible?
Probably not.
Okay. You know, I mean, this is, and I'm not saying it's right or wrong, you know, and I'm not disparaging Jeffrey Lurie's football acumen. I'm saying this is how it works, and this is how it's always worked. Jeffrey Lurie has a Super Bowl, and I think 6 NFC championship games. So, you know, and people like to be Eagles. People like to have been
sure,
Eagles.
Sure, absolutely.
Like to be Eagles. It's not a terrible organization.
No.
He's not a terrible guy.
Not at all. He's a good owner. I think he's a good owner.
So all that said, you know, let's back to your original point. You know, is Jeffrey Lurie going to help hire the offensive coordinator? Of course he is.
Well, what do you think of that system that the Eagles have in place to hire their people?
I've always thought it was insane. The only time I've had faith in this system is when Tom Modrak ran it. It was the only time since I've been here, and I got here in 1995, where there was a clear, powerful voice at the head of the table. And, you know, Modrak came in and he was charged with, you know, sort of rebuilding everything. And he did. You know, Tom Modrak, I'll tell you a little story. Tom Modrak, in 1998, I want to say. No, in 1997, saw Donovan McNabb play Pitt at Pittsburgh. And Syracuse and Pitt used to play all the time.
Right.
And he said, if I ever have a chance to draft that kid, I'm going to draft him. So all this, you know, all the rumors about Modrak wanting, you know, Ricky Williams and, you know, we want the bus part two. We're going to play Pittsburgh Steelers football because Modrak was, you know, the assistant GM
right.
of Pittsburgh.
Yep.
No, Tom Modrak wanted Donovan McNabb before Donovan McNabb was a senior in college.
Wow.
That's the last time this team has been run in a traditional manner. And a lot of teams aren't run in a traditional manner. A lot of owners have way too much say. A lot of owners aren't hands off. But a lot of coaches have way too much say. I've always been a firm believer that there should be a, you know, strict chain of command, that the guy picking the football players should be a guy who's been a football player and been a coach and been around football players, been a scout.
Yeah, that was kind of my point. Like, I was wondering, it took me a while to get you to say that was insane. I was wondering what you thought of that, but I agree with you. It's insane.
But, I mean, it's not failed. That's the thing. I mean, they can point to their Super Bowl. They can point to winning seasons. They can point to hiring non-traditional coaches. The two best coaches they've ever had, with all apologies to Dick Vermeil, are Andy Reid and Doug Peterson, neither of whom called plays as an offensive coordinator, one of whom wasn't even an offensive coordinator.
Wow, that's interesting. That's interesting stuff to digest. Well, let me ask you this, because, I mean, they hit on everything 2 years ago with free agents and trades, and that's how they kind of built their team. But I'm looking at the impact guys they've had since the Lane Johnson draft, and I see about 3 impact guys, real impact guys. And you look over like Dallas, and they have like 8 impact guys. Not the Dallas is anything, because they can't put it together either. But is that one of the reasons you think that might hold them back in the drafting process? Is there too many fingers in the pie?
I don't know. I don't know that that's the issue, because, you know, the last 2 drafts were run by 2 football guys, Joe Douglas and Andy Weidel.
Okay, then what do you think the issue is?
Well, I don't really know. I don't know that we can judge the last two drafts 2 years after the draft. I'm a pretty big believer in, like, 4 years.
I mean,
their 2 second-round picks are outstanding. You know, they're Dallas Goedert and Miles Sanders. Those are spectacular picks. And once you get below the third round, I'd say, you're kind of like looking for special teamers and guys you hope become starters. You know, the first three rounds are where you make your hay. And I think they're batting about, what, 500 in the first three rounds with those players. And, you know, you might have hit a home run with the tight end and with the running back. So, you know, and the left tackle, Andre Dillard, he looks like a real player,
mm-hmm.
you know. So I'm not going to disparage the recent drafts until I get, you know, Mac Hollins was a failure. Nelson Agholor wasn't a terrible pick. You know, Nelson Agholor gave you some value, you know, and he didn't have a very good first year or fourth year, but he had 2 good years in between, and he may have a great career going down the line.
What do you think?
Too early to say about all the recent guys. I'm sorry.
Well, that's okay. I'm sorry to interrupt. What do you do with this? Is the last question. I'll let you go, bro. You've been on the phone for a while, and I appreciate it. It's been compelling stuff. What do they do to replenish the wide receiver position, because they need a bunch of them?
I don't know, man. It's a really good crop this year. They have a lot of picks.
I would be surprised
to see them consolidate a lot of their picks and really take a couple of big gambles. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what they're going to do. Here's the thing. It's not that they haven't picked wide receivers. They've picked the wrong
runs. Wrong runs, yeah. Exactly.
You know, it's not that they haven't picked cornerbacks. They picked the wrong cornerbacks. And the same guys run in the room. You know, let's not pretend. I mean, the reason the Eagles went to the Super Bowl and won is because of Nick Foles and Chris Long and Torrey Smith and Alshon Jeffery.
LeGarrette,
you know, guys who were added, not guys who were drafted.
Right. That's what was my point. Yeah.
You know, so, you know, the same guy, Howie Roseman, is here. I fired Howie Roseman after Doug Peterson's rookie season because he did so many things were done poorly that first year, and he extended Vinnie Curry.
Right.
Who was an absolute bust after the extension relative to his contract. He wasn't a bad player, but he wasn't, you know, a $50 million player.
Sure.
So all those things considered, I was like, you know, that's enough. You know, you had your year post chip. And then of course the next year he won the Super Bowl. He won the Super Bowl with two guys who really knew what they were doing, especially around the league. Waddle and Joe Douglas both knew the league well enough to know who could fit this system, fit Jim Schwartz's system, and be productive.
Interesting. All right, man. That's great stuff. Very compelling stuff, Marcus. Appreciate it. You can read Marcus Hayes in the Philadelphia Inquirer often. And Marcus, we appreciate your time, man. Get back to the game, and we'll catch up with you soon. Thanks again.
All right, man. Talk to you later.
All right, Marcus. Marcus Hayes on the Comcast Business Hotline.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most fans of country music, we're excited to learn that Luke Combs was back in the studio working on his next album. We've come up with our list of iconic Luke Combs music videos. Yes, Lovin' On You made the cut. Text Luke to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Luke to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.